you can accept that proposition, but that doesn't deal with the language of step one. That's your problem. If step one said, if it's an unmodified message, do this, and step two said, if it's a modified message, do this, you could have, you know, you could have a claim that was written that way. It isn't. That's the problem, because step one tells you to go to steps 2 to 8 when you can't, because step two can never be performed if the conditions of one are satisfied.
And I guess that's the disagreement, because you can perform step two by finding it false and then continuing to 3 to 8. And I would ask the court to look at that technique at column 13, and if where specifically it's doing what steps 1 and 2 are doing, and it's doing using that technique. If the contingent is false, you continue down to the next step. It's column 13, steps 10, 11, and 12, accomplishing the same thing with that logical technique. And that's clearly what the patent teaches. The person of ordinary skill in the art would understand that logical technique so that the claim works perfectly. And that's why you have only in there, so that you have that mutual exclusivity between the steps 1 and 2. And when you perform step 1, you are performing step 2. And if step 2 is true and that contingent, then you perform steps 3 to 8.
Isn't there an implication that if something says if this occurs, do that? If this doesn't occur, you don't do that?
That's the denying the antecedent fallacy, where you read into the contingent step that if the contingent is false, then the negative of the consequent must be true. You're basically saying if the receiver is not configured as in step 2, then don't do step 3 to 8. And that's the logical fallacy that we pointed out in our briefing, that you have to either write that language into the claim or engage in that logical reasoning that's simply just not part of the claim.
Okay.